versus Brian Haugen, and the case number is A220542. And counsel, I know you are familiar with our appellate argument rules. Appellant will have 15 minutes to argue, respondent will get 15 minutes, and then appellant will have another five. I just ask that you please identify yourself and the party you represent before you begin your argument this morning, and if there is any other identifying information that would be helpful to us and would make you comfortable, please do let us know that as well as you begin your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Lisa Hollingsworth with Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services. I'm here this morning on behalf of the appellant, Brian Haugen. Mr. Haugen owns a manufactured home in the Belle Plaine Manufactured Home Park. He's lived in his own home in the park for over 39 years. Through the court's clear error, he's at risk of losing his home and becoming homeless. One thing I'd like to point out that's, I think, unique about this case is that the manufactured home park concedes that Mr. Haugen has a statutory right to redeem his tenancy. That's important here because that concession gets us closer to Mr. Haugen not becoming homeless through this case. And that's really important to him. It's the most important thing to him. How the court erred, though, is the court did not permit Mr. Haugen to redeem. The court, in fact, issued a footnote to its decision saying, I don't even know why they're talking about all these numbers. That's not before me. That's for conciliation court. What the court failed to do in addition to permitting Mr. Haugen to redeem was to help facilitate what that redemption amount would be. As you'll note in this case, Mr. Haugen, in June 2021, filed a rent escrow action against Belle Plaine Manufactured Home Park. The park states that it didn't go to the rent escrow hearing due to an internal administrative error. It never filed a Rule 60 motion to correct that administrative error. It just left the finding of the rent escrow action standing. And that finding was two things. Mr. Haugen didn't owe utilities, and he was entitled to a rent rebate for the amount of, or for June 2021, and that rent that was put into court was refunded to him and not to the park. So the redemption amount has two questions in it. One, does he owe that 1 month's rent, that June 2021 rent, and two, is he required to pay utilities? In addition to the rent escrow finding that he wasn't required to pay utilities because his lease doesn't state that, there's a case that Mr. Haugen brought before both the court in the rent escrow action and again in the trial in the eviction action, which is the Sargent case.
So jumping right into the Sargent case, the sure. Sargent case makes a comment about how under the circumstances there, the park owner did not reduce rent in addition to charging for utilities. And I'm wondering, respondent suggests that that's a material fact in the case. What is your view there?
Yeah, so the way that this case proceeded procedurally is that Mr. Haugen was provided a notice of rent increase in, I think, 2020. And then the park said, never mind, we're not going to increase rent, but we are going to start charging utilities. Then he went to the rent escrow court, and he challenged that finding. And the rent escrow court said, yeah, you don't have to pay utilities. Sargent seems to hold. So I don't think, I think the park here was intending to increase rent, certainly could have increased rent. But the timing of things doesn't line up as perfectly as the respondent says here. Two rent increases are permitted per year under 327C as long as they're reasonable. So the park could have done that. The park didn't do that. The park instead improperly charged him for utilities, just like in the Sargent case. And so The other rationale that the court below found is that somehow Sargent was not analogous because it was a class action rather than an individual person, and I can't find any support for that.
You'd argue that's a distinction that doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And the court, going back to the court's reasoning, there's nothing there, just the court says, yeah, it was a class action, so that's different. You know, I want to stress to this court today that there's the error that needs to be fixed here is Mr. Haugen has to be permitted to redeem his tenancy and remain a tenant in the park. That's just a blatant error. That's really harmful to him. But I think the court also needs to instruct the court below that, you know, what to do with that June 21 rent payment that he was awarded in the rent escrow action, and to make a determination once and for all about utilities. And I don't think that there's a meaningful distinction in Sargent. A point that I'll make here, in respondents' brief, they suggest that all 67 residents except for Mr. Haugen are billed for utilities. And that's not true. If you look at the transcript, there are 10 additional households that the park does not bill for utilities. It doesn't make their business model crumble.
So if we agree with you that charging utilities was a substantial modification of the rental agreement, I'm wondering if the district court has to be afforded the opportunity to consider the I'll call them mitigating factors that appear in 327 CO2 subdivision 2. In that statute, the legislature has said if something is found to be a substantial modification, a court can consider two circumstances, and based on my review of the record here, the district court did not consider those circumstances. Is it your position that the district court can even consider those circumstances now, and what would be the appropriate vehicle? And again, this is just assuming we agree with you on the substantial modification.
Yeah. So thank you for pointing out that there is that additional part of 327C. The Sargent case is so on point here that I don't know that the court could make a meaningful distinction between this case and Sargent if it applied it in any way other than saying that Sargent was a class action and this isn't.
Well, what about the fact, what about going back to that comment in Sargent that I asked you about right at the beginning? You know, we note that in Sargent, the park did reduce, or did not rather reduce rent. Is that Sargent considering the mitigating circumstances here?
Yeah, so here, the park didn't reduce rent either. It just decided not to impose a rent increase. It can impose a rent increase, and that's permissible under 327C. What's not permissible is to, you know, 39 years into Mr. Haugen's tenancy to alter the playing field for him.
I understand, a rent increase has to be uniform, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And arguably, what I'm looking at and following up on Judge Gaietis' question, I mean, there are some caveats, which I don't think were brought to the court's attention in Sargent, which may explain why it was not discussed there. But, you know, there are these significant changes in circumstances, and utility rates would be one of them. And, you know, here it seems like the park is trying to do the right thing, which is to pass along the charges to the people who are incurring them rather than raising everybody's rent across the board to accommodate the increase in utilities. What's wrong with that, and why wouldn't that rationale be some of these compensating benefits or significant change in circumstances that would warrant what would otherwise be a substantial modification?
Right. In this park, as I stated, there are 11 out of the 68 homes that don't have individual billing, the park moves forward with that regime. If the park simply elected to not bill any utilities, it could, you know, raise rents to compensate for that. Also, Mr. Haugen is one individual man. I don't think that his use is extreme. And so I don't think passing that billing on to him in particular has any particular impact on the park and how it functions. You know, as somebody who's practiced landlord-tenant law for a long time, I think that the statutory structures are really set up to discourage individual billing of utilities. It's hard to get it right. And that's why very often utilities are included in rent and absorbed that way.
Is the record here sufficient for us to, you know, as a matter of law, consider whether there are those mitigating factors?
The court didn't really consider them. I think that I would like the court to simply reverse, but I would like the court to reverse by, of course, saying that, he was improperly billed for utilities and that it was an unreasonable rule. If the court wants to look at whether there were mitigating circumstances, the record isn't very well developed on that because I don't think the parties argued it. If the court doesn't have any more questions, I will.
I do have one question.
Of course.
So the way I understand respondents' argument is that the district court doesn't need to do the right to redemption, that there's some other process that could be used. Is that the case, or is this something that we need to make sure goes back to the district court?
Yeah, so
on the redemption issue, or what's your argument on the redemption issue?
Right, so the way that the mechanics of the district court's order, the court says the eviction is granted and the writ can issue, and the writ in fact did issue. So at very least, there has to be a mechanism in the order that permits him to redeem, and there wasn't one here. What counsel, I think, would be saying, if counsel is correct, is that the only way a tenant could redeem is if they didn't challenge the amount owed. Because here, Mr. Haugen could only redeem his tenancy if he paid what the park said was the amount owed. He would have no mechanism for challenging the June 2021 rent that was returned to him. He would have no mechanism for challenging this utility billing. He would have to, without a mechanism in the order, he would have to just take at face value that what the park says he owes is what he owes, and he can only redeem if he pays that amount. Also, that was never offered to him. So in the transcript, the park and the park's attorney were assuming that Mr. Haugen would redeem. Mr. Haugen was assuming he would redeem. His counsel talked about, you know, you have to figure this out in order to figure out how much he owes. But then the court's order is simply lacking in providing a mechanism, and the court has to determine at the very least whether he owes June 2021 rent and whether he owes utility billing. And the court said he owes the utility billing. The court didn't say anything about June 2021 rent, and the court didn't permit him to redeem his tenancy.
So it's your position that even if the district court does not need to set a particular amount, there's a correction that needs to happen in terms of the order to permit the right to redeem to happen? Is that?
I think the court needed to determine a dollar amount, or at least show enough reasoning so that the parties could come up with the correct dollar amount, and the court needed to expressly permit him to redeem his tenancy by paying what was owed to the park. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. Next, we'll hear from counsel for respondent.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Boyd here on behalf of the respondent, Bill Plain. Bill Plain respectfully requests the court to affirm the district court's judgment. The district court did not err with respect to Mr. Hagen's statutory right to redeem the tenancy under the statute. Bill Plain complied fully with both the statute and our reading of the cases that apply to the park owner's rights, statutory rights, and authority to impose the utility charges. And finally, the district court did not abuse its discretion in declining to apply the doctrines of either res judicata or collateral estoppel based on the prior order by Judge Fallon.
Mr. Boyd, do you concede that Mr. Hagen has a right to redeem?
Yes, we do, and it's not even for me to concede. I believe it's from statute.
It's a legal right.
That's right.
And with regard to the amount, I know there's some dispute as to the district court's obligation to determine the amount, but would you also agree that the amount is an issue that is in dispute in this case, separate and apart from any argument related to the utilities just based on the June decision?
I don't know that it is in dispute. The district court's decision addressed the utility issue, and of course, this court may reach that issue, and then it would be addressed. So the issue of what utilities he owes if he's obligated to pay those should be very clear. He gets the statements from the utility providers directly. So he has that information. If he's obligated to pay that and he owes some back payments for the utilities, that's readily calculable. The court...
So just so that I'm clear, are you arguing that the court's previous order in the case, in response to the escrow and default judgment has been changed by the court's newer decision in the case regarding the lawfulness of the utility payments?
Let me make sure I address your question. To the extent that Judge Fallon's order dealt with some particular amount of what we believe he's owed, that may well be enforceable and perhaps needs to be deducted. But to the extent that this court is being asked to apply Judge Fallon's earlier order in some broader way, either through collateral estoppel or otherwise, that would be inappropriate. Counsel for the appellant indicated that Judge Fallon analyzed Sargent and decided that the case was controlled by Sargent. There's nothing in the order to indicate that. The order states the defendant or the park owner did not appear, and therefore he was granting default. He then said that the court also notes it appears the merits of petition's request are valid as well. That's dicta, and it doesn't indicate whether he was looking at the statute, case law, what he was looking at. So that was at best dicta. And then his order itself says the park owner didn't appear, therefore it's defaulted and the escrow is granted. So to the extent there's some subtraction that needs to be made based on the amount the order addressed, that may be appropriate. And there again, it's readily calculable. My point is that appellant's rights under the statute, both to redeem and for a calculation of what amount is required, does not require a district court order. That's in statute, and I believe 504B 291 subdivision 1 includes the manner in which it's calculated. And we address that in our brief.
What I understand appellant to say is that the way the district court entered the eviction, the way the order section is written, that would somehow preclude the ability to redeem. And do you have a position on whether the district court's order needs to be corrected in order for Mr. Haugen to have the right to redeem?
I do not, for two reasons. The court subsequently granted appellant's motion to stay the issuance of the writ, and that had a retroactive effect. So the to the extent that the writ had been issued, it's been stayed, and I believe he continues to remain in his home. To the extent that there's an argument by appellant that the district court had to enter a specific amount that would be required to be paid, there's no case law to support that. There's nothing in the statute to support that. The statute itself identifies how that amount would be calculated. So there's no need to modify the district court's order.
So separate and aside from the amount question, the district court didn't need to put in their order from the date of judgment, Mr. Haugen has this many days to redeem. That just happens by virtue of the statute. The district court didn't need to enter anything specific into the order, is your position?
The statute as well as the case law on that particular point, okay. And appellant's counsel may have greater knowledge of this, but I think the 641 case that's cited by appellant indicates that he would continue to have the right to redeem until the writ issues and he's removed from the property.
Okay.
And he's still on the property. And the issuance of the writ has been stayed.
Yeah. Thank you.
Certainly. With regard to the imposition or the direct charges for the utilities, that's the issue I would like to turn to now. We believe the district court properly found that Belle Plaine was in compliance with the statutory requirements. The statute, as we've described it in our briefs, is quite clear. And it's our position that there are three different types of things the statute regulates: rules, rents, and utilities.
I understand the analysis that you set forth in your brief. I'm just wondering, I guess there are two problems that I have with it, and maybe you can address those. First,
right.
Sargent, obviously, I think, is a problem for your position, but also just the plain language of 327C01 subdivision 10, which defines a rule. It defines a rule as any rental agreement provision, and I'm wondering how the imposition of utilities would not have been a change of a rental agreement provision.
Our interpretation of that provision or that definition, first of all, it's defining rule. Secondly, it's defining where you can, or it's identifying where you may find a rule, whether it's in a rental agreement, in a regulation, a rule, or a policy. So those are all examples of where you'll find a rule. And then it defines what a rule is. A rule is an effort or is some action by the park owner to control, affect, or seek to control or affect the behavior of the residents. Utilities are not only separately defined, which is important, but also the imposition of utility charges is neutral. It's not an effort to control or affect the behavior of the residents. It's to require recompense or compensation for the cost of those services that are being used by the resident. So
that seems to run right up into Sargent, where this court held otherwise, interpreted the rule differently.
Judge Gaetis already beat me to the punch in terms of the language specifically used by the panel in Sargent, expressly, quote, noting that in that case, the park owner had added the utility charges on top of the existing rent. And in doing so, they found that was a substantial change because that's double dipping. The rent, as being charged, already included a component for the utility charges. They then added utilities on top of that. They didn't decrease it, and that's the important concept that the Court of Appeals had focused on, and that's why it was evaluated in terms of whether there was a substantial change to the lease agreement.
So are you suggesting that our court, without really saying so, was looking farther down into 327C.02 subdivision 2 to in fact see if substantial modification, you know, was mitigated by these other circumstances?
Yes, and that's what they were being asked to do. And I will be frank, I have not read the briefs that were submitted in that case, but the opinion identifies the issue as a narrow issue of whether the park owner's imposition of utility charges in that particular case, where the rents remain the same and then they added utilities on top of that. They were double counting, double dipping. They were doing something more than just passing through the utilities as they're permitted to do under the statute. They were asked to review it as a substantial change. Is that, and in fact, even more pointedly, I believe the park owner argued that's a rent change, not a rule change, and didn't focus the court's attention on the third alternative with the which the legislature identified. Is it a change in how the utilities are being charged? And I don't want to beat a horse that's not yet dead since it's in our brief, but again, the statute 327C is very clear in having completely different subdivisions for utility charges, which is subdivision 04, rules, which is 05, and rent increases, which is 06. The legislature is also very clear in delineating grounds for termination under 327C09. Subdivision 2 says termination for failure to pay rent or utilities. Subdivision 4 provides for termination for violation of rules. So the important concept that I want to stress or reiterate from our brief is these are three different types of things that the legislature identified and three different processes or ways in which a park owner can change those three categories of things. Utilities can always be charged as long as they're charged in accordance with the statute. Here, they're being charged by passing them through directly to the individual based on that individual's actual use of the utility service. Council indicated that there was some question about the accuracy of utility charges, whether or not passing those charges through directly was an accurate way to do it. The legislature has said that's how you do it. That's accurate. We're doing that through a metering process. So it is, by definition, accurate. It is based on the individual's own use.
What about the fact, setting aside the statutes for a moment, what about the fact that Mr. Haugen, negotiated this lease a number of years ago that very clearly states that the park is going to pay for utilities? How is that not a substantial modification of the lease when the park is saying we're not going to abide by that term anymore?
First of all, the legislature has said that's not the appropriate standard to apply to utility charges. Secondly, I don't know what.
And when you say the appropriate standard, do you mean looking at the lease terms or
looking at the statute? To the extent there's some argument about the lease terms, I don't think that's been raised. I don't think a contract argument has been made here. I think the argument has been Sargent has interpreted the statute to require that if you're going to change how the utilities are being charged, you have to comply with the procedure for rule changes, substantial changes. That's wrong as a matter of law, and that's a misinterpretation of Sargent. But secondly, to the extent...
I do have a question it does seem like Sargent directly made a holding on the question of whether these changes to utilities are rules. So for us to adopt your argument, do we need to overturn Sargent?
No, you can narrowly interpret Sargent based on the unique facts there where the park owner was double dipping, and the Court of Appeals specifically called out that fact. So that decision was based on the narrow facts. Secondly, the court wasn't asked to determine whether or not utilities should be subject to the separate statutory provision. Third, I'm running out of time, so I'll make this point. To the extent that the standard for substantial changes that's applied to rule changes is applied here. We satisfy that, and the district court so held. The district court held that by reducing the rents and then applying or charging the utilities directly, that that was not a substantial change. And that fact, that evidentiary finding by the district court, has not been challenged on appeal. So whether you apply the appropriate standard for changing the way in which utilities are charged, which is under subdivision 3 of the statute, which specifies how utilities will be charged, or you apply the substantial change standard that applies only to rules, we've satisfied both standards. And Mr. Haugen is paying nothing more than what he is, what the park owner is permitted to charge him for utilities under the statute, whether it's considered a rule or a utility. Thank you for the additional time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Hollingsworth, back to you.
Sure. Mr. Haugen's rent includes a component for utility charges. His lease says this is your rent amount, and it includes the park covering the cost of utilities. So to say that this is distinguishable from Sargent on that basis is just not factually correct. Also, as to the issue of how an order should look, it's not like this. The writ issued in this case, if Mr. Haugen hadn't appealed this case, he would be homeless. That's not a redemption order. That's not a right to redeem.
So let me ask you that along those lines. Say we just affirmed, issued our decision. What would happen?
Well, I think that he would be evicted on this order because the writ issues. We might be able to negotiate a settlement with counsel because they're saying, oh, we intend for him to be able to redeem, but it would be a negotiated settlement and not what the mechanism of the order would do. If you affirm, we go back to where we were, and we go back to the landlord being able to issue a writ of recovery or ask the court to issue a writ of recovery, then the sheriff executes that writ of recovery, and then Mr. Haugen loses possession of his home. So that's the order that the court issued, and that's an impermissible order where he has the statutory right to redeem. And it's a very important statutory right to redeem in this case. He owns his home. He's lived there 39 years. But he was also just attempting to enforce what he had a good faith to believe was the law. He first of all filed a rent escrow action. Landlord didn't show up. He won his rent escrow action and was awarded rent, June 2021 rent, plus a finding from the court that said, yeah, I think that what you're bringing to me has some merit. The landlord never sought relief under Rule 60. And, you know, where that I think leaves us is that the landlord, the park, is left with that claim preclusive effect. Cole versus Metro HRA, you know, has a section in it where, in that case, the tenant didn't go to her eviction hearing. She was in default. She was ordered evicted. And then she subsequently went to Metro HRA, who is the provider of her voucher, and said, you know, I didn't go to court, but I get to re-argue my eviction here because I was in default there. And the court said, no, a default judgment has the same preclusive effect as a non-default judgment. So if the court doesn't want to figure out whether it needs to overrule Sargent in this case, it can simply say, you know, that default order has preclusive effect, and that preclusive effect says he doesn't owe utilities and he should be awarded June 2021 rent. On that basis, or on the basis that Sargent applies in this case, Mr. Haugen should not be required to pay utilities. He should be awarded June 2021 rent, and he should be afforded his statutory right to pay what he owes and to remain a tenant in the park.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your very helpful arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court, and we will issue our decision.